Real Nerds is a proud partner of the Denver Podcast Network. In the shadow of the mountains,
we speak.
Hi, my name is Paul Caroli, and I host a podcast called Changing Denver. It's a monthly show about our city's physical spaces, how we make them, and how they make us. But it's so much more than that. It's the conversations, ideas, and stories that define Denver's perpetual state of flux. Find more from our team at changingdenver.com and join the conversation on Twitter at Changing Denver. Denver's changing. We can help.
Oh, hi, podcast listeners. There's many ways you can listen to the Real Nerds podcast. You can subscribe on iTunes. You can also subscribe on Stitcher Radio. You want to send us a Twitter message? You can do that. It's so easy, at Real Nerds. Like us on Facebook, Real Nerds Podcast. You can visit our website, realnerdspodcast.com, where there'll be a lot of articles for you to not only read, but to listen to our previous shows. You can also call us, 720-6NERDS5. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Hi, this is Georges Genty, and you are listening to Real Nerds Podcast.
Hey everybody, here's an exciting Real Nerds interview that we did at Denver Comic Con 2018. Hope you enjoy it. Alrighty, we are here on the floor at Denver Comic Con 2018, if I remember what year it is, right? Whew. Man, it is getting to be long days, but it's Saturday here. We're about halfway through, and I am here with Brandon and Alvin. Guys, say hi.
Hey.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Hey, thank you so much for coming by. You're good. How's the show been so far?
Oh, it's been very great. I was here yesterday.
Yes, we talked to you yesterday.
Yeah, so I obviously was here, but even with the amount of time I spent here, when I left and then come back and then leave again, come back, I still haven't seen everything, and it's long.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the busiest year I've ever seen for sure. And the con is the actual floor space is about the same as it's been in the past. But it feels like more people for sure. I mean, the aisles are tight, like it's hard to move through, and there's just an overwhelming amount of stuff to look at, you know?
Yeah, it's so concentrated. It's like I was telling my dad earlier, it's almost like if these were houses, this could be like a postal route.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it's especially the amount that you're walking. Alvin, have you ever been to a con like this before?
This is only my second time, so I'm a newbie.
Yeah. I think most people here, unless they're like us, where they've been here every year, have never seen something this big, you know, like, cause even if you go down to Albuquerque, any of those, they're just not, unless you go all the way out to San Francisco or San Diego, it's hard to see anything like this.
Yeah, this is massive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's sometimes overwhelming. It's so much. You need more than 3 days.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And every now and then you find yourself like needing to escape to way over there, there's an exit door that I can see that I could probably get 3 square feet to myself.
Exactly.
That I could just, like, breathe, you know? There's just always people and so much stimulus as you're walking by. But
oh, yeah.
What are you looking for? What are you excited about? What have you seen that's exciting?
Well, a lot of the artists, really.
Yeah.
The artwork here has been amazing. There were people here yesterday that I've seen again today.
Yeah.
And there are people who I saw yesterday who I don't think are here right now. Like, they were either out or whatnot. But the artist definitely is kind of amazing because you just see so many different styles, so many different types of influences. There was one guy in the corner. I didn't see him. He was he took the traditional ancient Japanese art style and put it to modern stuff like Pokemon, Dragon Ball Z, and whatnot.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'm sorry I didn't buy a print from him because I think he ran out. I think he ran out yesterday because there were some prints I wanted to get from him, but I was still like, let me look around. I don't want to blow it all at once. But, I'm not sure if he's got any more.
I was talking to somebody this morning about the fact that, like, you get onto the con floor and you immediately start seeing stuff you want. And the danger is, and I did this probably the first 4 years I came, the danger is I blow $200 in 45 minutes, and then I start finding the stuff I really wanted.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, I've bought all this stuff, and then I go, oh, if I had, you know, so now, and I shouldn't say this because not everybody gets to do this, not everyone has the privilege I do. When we get in, because we have a booth, I get in a little bit early and walk it when there's nobody here and don't buy anything, you know, because I don't want to bother people while they're setting up. But I just look.
And you're scoping.
I'm scoping. And then I know, like, oh, I got to come back to you. You got stuff I need, you know? And then I think that's generally the way, if I were just coming to attend. In fact, last year when we didn't have a booth, that's what I did was, like, Friday I came and I just walked it. I just looked around and then I started going, all right, what do I actually want to spend money on, you know? Because it's a dangerous place to be. There's just so much beautiful stuff.
Dangerous place to be if you have money to burn, and especially if you don't.
Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say, yeah, money or no money is dangerous. Because I've definitely walked away from with some pieces that I'm proud of, but I'm like, ooh, man, that cost me some money, you know?
You know, it's been pretty good to see the different perspectives in all of the artwork and the stories of the work that's being published and produced. Because as I'm older, so we didn't get Comic-Con when I was growing up.
Yeah.
We had certain venues for comic books, Marvel or DC, and to see the different perspectives and points of view and the diversity in the artwork from Native Americans, Black Americans, Asian Americans, there's so much diversity in the comic book world now. It's so fascinating to see it like that.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's a lot of different styles that you see as well.
Because there's a mass... Currently, there's a massive generational gap right in front of you.
Oh, yeah.
And I can easily imagine... I mean, I've seen Dad's comic book collection, the times when I snuck in and touched it. Like, Dad remembers the time when I was sneaking in there and pulling comic books out of the sleeves. Mind you, I was a kid, so I didn't think that these were worth anything. I'm thinking comic books, pictures, stuff that.
Yes.
But I do remember there... I can guarantee you that there's never... that even when I was looking through it, there was not that much stuff... like Dad said, diversity in the comic book selections. Like, I was amazed when there was a James Bond one.
Yeah,
because I was into James Bond at the time and all that.
But James Bond looks like every other superhero, looks like every other character, right? Like, it's, you know, it is really cool to look around and see, like you said, so much diversity here. And it seems so obvious. We were talking to an author earlier today, and she was talking about how much, you know, what a struggle, she's Indian, and what a struggle it's been to get some of her stuff published even 6 years ago when it was, you know, either based in Hindu mythology or whatever, and then what a struggle it was to get, like, the covers to have characters of color on the cover and stuff like that. And you're looking around here, and you go, but the fans that are here are diverse. Like, the most beautiful thing about this is as you look around, no two people are the same. Right. There's so much. Everyone is represented.
I have found that a little odd. Because, I mean, it might be a marketing thing for a lot of the big companies.
Sure.
We got to keep it the same. We got to, because that's what's selling.
They're afraid.
For example, the whole idea, sex sells, that's that kind of thing. It's always, and there's a baseline truth to it. That's always going to sell. But they don't want to take risks on, they don't want to take risks or chances. And I've always found that odd, especially considering that, again, like you just mentioned, there's such a diverse crowd around here. There's Star Wars reaches all over the world.
Mm-hmm.
Naruto, Dragon Ball Z, all over the world. There's that whole thing. And I was amazed when I found out how big Dragon Ball Z, for example, was in Brazil. The last episode of Dragon Ball Super, when it was premiering, was being live streamed over to Brazil in the middle of, like, I think a crowded square on a huge movie screen. There were thousands of people there cheering and as the fights were going on and all that. And I'm thinking, I didn't realize it was that big in Brazil. And it's like, well, then it shouldn't be that hard to reach other markets in this, especially in America with such a diverse community coming around. We're all here for our love of something nerdy.
Well, and I think what I've always argued is that those producers, those people who are in charge, don't actually understand what it is we like.
Right.
And so they don't understand.
They're looking only at the numbers.
What
sells?
They're looking at the surface of the things that we go and buy. And because those things have always been white male things, they assume that that's part of what it was, and it had nothing to do with it, right?
You're the only person running the market, when you're the only thing on the shelf, of course it's going to sell.
That's what everybody's selling. Exactly, everybody's buying. But the truth is, you know, for so many of us, I think we care about the character and we care about the story, and the look of the character isn't that that important to it, right? Like, it, you know, now there's certainly some for, you know, that's enticing, but the truth is, I am just as engrossed when I go see Black Panther as I am when I go see Captain America. And to me, those characters are reflections of who I want to be, completely separated from how they look, you know? Their culture is certainly integrated into that, but who Black Panther is and what he stands for and all of that is a lesson that I carry with me the same way that Steve Rogers is. And that has nothing to do with what those characters look like. And I think that marketing agencies don't understand that what they're selling is that story and that feeling and the adventure, and all of that is the stuff that is completely separate from the way a character looks.
But and you're right about that. We love the stories, we love the characters for what they do, by their, like Martin Luther King said, by their character,
yeah,
by their actions, not by what they look like.
Right.
We don't judge them by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character.
Right.
And I can easily imagine Captain America, Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, if it wasn't for the time period that they were introduced in, they could have easily been black,
absolutely,
white, Asian, whatever, and mm-hmm, people would have still loved them. But
yes,
the problem was, of course, and this is a problem that's not gone away, while it is less prevalent nowadays, it's not like, but it was much more prolific back then.
Yeah.
You got to sell white characters. You got to sell this. You got to sell it like this
yeah,
way, only this way,
right,
because that's the only way anyone's going to buy it.
Yeah.
And the problem was, when there were minority characters, they were stereotyped.
Absolutely.
They were drawn horribly. They were jokes, the
absolutely,
butts of jokes.
Yeah.
I mean, there was, I think this one character during the World War II years called, I think, Whitewash Jones.
Oh, good.
Mm. That's
you
pretty
see,
good. I don't know about that one.
I,
that's good
I,
history there, though.
That's good. I found this out from a friend of mine,
yeah,
at community college when I was going.
Okay.
And he told me that basically it was I think it was like a kid's kind of comic book based on like who our allies were at the time.
Mm. Yeah.
But the Black American was basically presented as Whitewash Jones, and he was, of course, scared of ghosts, which, again, being Africans were superstitious. The Klan was based on trying to scare people, scare using that idea of ghosts.
Yeah, but
of
yeah,
sheets and things like that, and it was just that stereotype that kept getting pushed.
Yeah.
And, of course, it got shown in the comics. It's the main reason why certain comics are no longer, some characters in comics are no longer in print.
Right.
Why we don't draw them a certain way anymore.
Right.
And it's, and culturally we have moved more and more past that, and it's a great thing. But with the market as it was, you got what you got and you enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah.
Or else you might as well just not enjoy it, read it at all.
You think
and then that market, because it was nailed and riveted to this idea of what sells, the next generation, the next generation, when it was time for them to run the companies, believed, okay, this is what sells, this is what we got to keep
yeah,
pushing.
Yeah, do you think that it's basically that the people move before the content, right? Like, the people change slowly, but over generations get to a place where they are better and more accepting. I would certainly think that they are. And then it takes a while for the content, because those people, the bottom line is their guideline, right, is trying to figure out what sells. But it takes a while for them to realize, to sort of test that water and go, oh, the market will take this now, you know, like people will buy this. And hopefully that's why something like Black Panther is as big of a deal as it is. Not just, hey, man, it sold really well, but that people showed up in droves, and all kinds of people, like that thing blew up the records, right, when that movie came out. And hopefully it means that people look at things and go, oh, what we thought was a barrier before and what we thought people didn't want or would be afraid of, they don't care about. They want good stories, and they want good characters, and they
right,
want representation.
And I do believe that's what, when Marvel went to that extreme left for a period,
yeah,
I think that's why they lost sales, mainly. Because
that's
they
true,
were doing, I mean, they had some, I'm still not big into comics, but I remember there was some screenshot of certain panels of one guy, of I think it was a villain from Thor, talking about Israel. talking about and this is literally what the bubble said, unsolicited opinions on Israel. And I'm like, and I was thinking, why on earth would a villain, a Norse villain, ever care about Israel?
Right.
Why would he ever even consider that? And I could understand. And I was thinking, why on earth are they pushing that? I mean, they went so far in the other direction.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand change, and there's going to be times when change needs to come now.
Yeah.
Or needs to be pushed, or then it comes naturally.
Yeah.
But there are just times when people just overreach so much and just shove stuff that people obviously don't want. You change the subject. You change the very fabric of a villain.
Yeah.
In order to push an agenda.
I think it comes back to the stories. That's really what the basic is. The basic of all of this is the story and the characters.
Yeah.
And it does not really have a whole lot to do with the ethnicity of the characters as much as the great stories.
Mm-hmm.
Our country has moved. You know, our people have moved. And the beauty of our nation is that we change, we move, and we progress to things that we may not have considered years ago.
Yeah.
And that's what makes us so much a more perfect nation.
Yeah.
By no means are we perfect.
No.
But we are, as I like to say sometimes, we're perfectly imperfect.
Yes.
Because we acknowledge that we are not perfect, but we know that we have perfection around us.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I see here, is that our country has changed so much that we have all of this available now.
Yeah.
And it certainly wasn't available when I was growing up, back in the 70s and 80s. This would have been unheard of to see. So I enjoy coming here. I've come with my son twice now, and we go around and see things. I would have never picked up these comic books had I not talked to some of the authors, and just having that ability and that opportunity to speak with them, find out what their passion is and why they wrote these stories, and get behind the support of the story itself.
Amen. Alvin, you are a wise man, and I love you.
Well,
that was fantastic.
I'm hoping I'm giving it to him.
I'm glad he's passed down a little bit of sense. I may not pay attention 90% of the time, but the 10%, I do try my best.
Yeah. Every now and then when Alvin's talking and everyone gets quiet and they go, ooh, that's when you know that's the 10% I got to listen to. That's when, ears are open now. No, it's very true, you know, and I think it's a very wise statement that, you know, the imperfection and acknowledging that imperfection is a big part of what makes us better. And it's a big part of what has to continue, you know. We've got to be really open about the conversation. And when things like Zach and I were actually talking about this yesterday because of John Lasseter stepping down at Disney and all this stuff and you know, talking about all the Me Too things that happened and Harvey Weinstein. And I said, you know, the most important thing, in my opinion, that has to come out of this is that people have to be able to talk about it and that victims have to feel comfortable coming forward. If that changes, the whole world can change, right? Like that, we have to be open about the fact that things can be wrong. We can have done things wrong in the past, and the job is to recognize it, talk about it, and figure out not even like what's the right solution, but just try different solutions and try to figure it out. Try to figure out how do you do representation well, right? Because there's two sides to it, right? That, as we were talking, I thought about Ms. Marvel, where they relaunched Ms. Marvel and they made her shoot. I think she was part Indian or part black, something like that. But you know, here's this big character that you've relaunched and you've made her a character of color, and it's great. And that's one where it wasn't addressed, right? Like it was just she was just another teen in America, because that's what teens look like. They're diverse. And then sometimes you have books that really lean on the culture and have a lot to say about the race of that character, whatever they are. And all of those are good answers, right? All of them. You know, I think about my niece who's six. I want her to have both. I want her to have the characters who are African and they are from Africa and have a real deep African culture. And then I want the ones who are you know, African-Americans who look like her friends at school. And I want her to understand that all those people are regular people and mm-hmm. deserve representation, you know. So I think it was a very wise statement. Man, this is the best conversation I've had all day.
Oh,
and I talked to Vegeta earlier. This is great. My goodness.
Well, you know, I like Luke Cage.
Yeah.
But see, I like Luke Cage because he writes wrong.
Yeah.
I could care less about a lot of the other parts of it, but I get behind the fact that there is this one big guy who says my role is to go out and right the wrong that's in this community.
Yeah.
And I love that. Absolutely. That's the kind of story I think that would inspire young people to see things that are being trying to be made right.
Yeah.
And they can see that wrong that's around their life and say, maybe I can do something to do the same thing that Luke Cage is doing.
Amen. Absolutely. That's cool.
I mean, well, I do have to agree with Dad. I personally started watching the Marvel TV shows because of the whole Jessica Jones series and because David Tennant was in it, because I loved him as the Doctor. When I found out that he was going to be the purple guy, and I didn't even know anything about the purple guy.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not so much into comics as more manga.
Yeah. And that is that's a more obscure, but you know, not everybody's read Alias, so like, yeah.
But I watched Jessica Jones, and then I moved on to Luke Cage, and I realized what Dad pointed out. We don't have many heroes like that.
Yeah.
People who not only just fight for right justice and whatnot on the American way on a large scale like Superman.
Right.
We don't have very many heroes who just work on a community level.
Yeah.
Who say, let's just make sure we can clear out this so we can have some safety here, some progress here, some actual community and unity here. You don't have very many heroes like that.
Yeah, no, that's very true. Yeah, they often have to go save the world, and you're like, well, but I don't live in the world. I live here.
It's a very small. It's a small box, unfortunately.
Yeah. It's a very smart, emotional conversation. You know, it's actually ends up being a whole lot more entertaining than the Supermans of the world, for sure. Oh, I'm just saying it ends up being a lot more entertaining than like Superman stories where he's got to go blow everything up.
Well, yeah, because when you think about Superman, it's Superman. He's got America. He's got the world to protect. He's got the Justice League. He's got Batman, Wonder Woman, the big three, basically.
Yeah.
And then, but with that, you realize this kind of scale he fights on. You know what to expect when you see Superman. It's like, okay, he fights for truth, justice, the American way.
Right.
That means that's a large scale. But then you have Luke Cage.
Right.
You have Jessica Jones. You have Daredevil. They're much smaller, on a much smaller scale. They fight for their communities.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only imagine how inspiring Daredevil would be.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a man with a disability who's a lawyer, who not only fights on the streets, but fights terrible odds in the courtroom.
Yeah.
While you might not have powers, you can still have a disability and still be powerful enough to fight in a courtroom against a major corporation.
Yeah.
It's not so much pandering as just presenting a character. This is what's wrong with him, but look, this is what he can still do.
You're very right.
Whereas with Jessica Jones' storyline, it was so depressing.
Yeah, she's got a lot of internal problems, and so you end up, if anything, her story is about how you overcome the problems within yourself, you know?
How you overcome your past and traumas.
Yeah, right? Like, that ends up being in a very rocky way, right? Like, the biggest enemy you're ever going to fight is the one in the mirror, right? Like, that is true for her, you know? And the Purple Man ends up being that reflection in a lot of ways of what she is afraid of in herself, you know? But that story is very similarly, it's about here. It's about where I'm actually at. It's not about, you know, it's about the fact that I got to pay rent. And that makes it a hero that I can really.
I'm trying to pull from memory. Isn't her main problem that she has to pay rent?
Yeah, actually, I was just saying that because it was a very realistic thing. But you're right. Yeah, her paying rent is a hard thing in that show.
I don't know Jessica.
It's on Netflix. You can watch it tonight if you'd like.
Yeah, you should check it out.
But I do have a question.
Yeah, absolutely.
From your perspective, Dad. When you compare it to what you're used to, has there been a different kind of scale to it? I mean, beyond just the bigger Comic-Con, but when you look at the media that you grew up with and compare it to what it is now, not just on change, but on a scale, what do you think about that?
We can't really measure the scale. It's so is so prolific right now compared to the way it was. We only had certain stores you can go get comic books from.
Yeah.
So, and if you didn't order it through the mail or go to that store and get it, and if you missed that issue, you had to try and order it through the mail, and if you didn't get it then you were out of luck. You didn't have any option to find these authors anywhere else and go direct to them to get those issues of the books that you like. And it is massive now. I mean, comic books was just a newsstand when I grew up. That's all it was.
Yeah.
It was nothing like this. It really wasn't.
Yeah.
It's just fascinating to see what it's grown to. Mm-hmm.
Actually, now that I think about it, didn't Grandma throw out your old comic book collection?
No.
She didn't?
I have that.
Well, I could have sworn you told me that. You did something and Grandma got upset.
No.
She didn't take your comic books?
No.
I would have disowned that woman.
No.
I could have sworn you told me that story once.
Oh,
maybe
no.
I might be mistaken.
I think you got it confused with something else.
Oh.
I could be.
Yeah.
I actually, from my experience, Shonen Jump was my main thing.
Sure.
When I was in eighth grade especially, I had the subscription. And I don't know if Shonen Jump still has the subscription. I could be.
Yeah, I don't know.
I definitely know. For me, it wasn't so much, you could get Shonen Jump from the bookstore. But you had to get an issue from the bookstore or you had to get a monthly subscription. Because if you missed it, odds are you weren't getting it. Similar to Dad.
Right.
The thing is, for me, the Shonen Jump books were the only main difference I could see from my experience to Dad's was the Shonen Jump books had so many more stories. I mean, they were just different chapters of these different series all slammed into one.
Mm-hmm.
One book with advertisements and all that other stuff. What you usually get, toys, video games, things like that. I looked at Dad's old comic books and it was for toys that I don't think are being even produced anymore. Things like, and you could get, like, wasn't it like at one point you could order, like, game systems and stuff like that and it was like $600 or something?
Well, I remember those seahorses that they had in there and the Charles Atlas books to get you stronger. Those advertisements, I remember seeing those in there.
Oh, that's funny.
Well, it's kind of surprising how similar our experiences are with that. Because I remember I was torn up. I lost one issue. Out of the whole entire subscription for the 12 months, I lost one issue. I don't know where it went. I did not take it to school. I never take that stuff to school because I know it's going to get taken.
Yeah,
someone's going to sneak into my backpack and take something or just straight up just snatch it off me, and I'm not going to go through that.
Yeah.
But I turned up the house upside down looking for that thing.
Oh.
I still don't have it. That's out of all the ones I got for like 2 years of subscriptions. I have them all. I still lost that one, and I was torn up about it.
Wow.
I can only imagine what it would have been like for Dad if he had lost one of his.
Oh, yeah. 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 No, it was a lot harder. Absolutely.
We just never got the sleeves and the cardboard backing. That's the one thing. We never got the sleeves or the cardboard backing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will say, it does surprise me how, even though it's changed a lot, and how similar it was, because Dad's, how long has it been since you stopped collecting comic books? Because I know I got Shonen
Jump.
It's been
at least 20 years.
Oh, yeah, so I definitely got Shonen Jump long after you stopped collecting.
Oh, yeah.
But it's strange how similar it was.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Came through the mail, you're waiting on it, you're excited.
That's right.
And then when it reads, you read it a couple times, and you're like, okay, got to be careful with it now.
Yes. Oh, 100%. Absolutely. Because you know you're going to go back to it. Yeah. Well, cool. Are you guys here? You guys are here tomorrow, too?
Or Dad's only got a Saturday. I'm going to be back for Sunday.
Oh, okay.
I might swing by.
Yeah, you should. Absolutely. Alvin, I really appreciate you coming by. This was a really great conversation. Thank you so much.
A lot of fun.
Obviously, you are welcome back whenever you want.
All right.
That was really cool.
I've never been part of a podcast.
Yeah.
And I still, I do believe I'd love to do this regularly. I get to talk. Because that's the one thing I do a lot. I talk.
Yeah. Well, that's the great thing about Denver Comic Con is we talk to anybody. And it ends up being really great, everybody I talk to. It's so much fun.
All the stories.
Yeah, absolutely.
All the stories.
Every story. Hey, thank you guys so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it, Al.
You have a nice day.
Thanks for listening to another fantastic interview at Denver Comic Con 2018. We had an amazing time, and we look forward to seeing you again next year.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Real Nerds Podcast. Real Nerds Podcast is a production of Nebulous Visions Multimedia. Thank you to Sparks Mandrill and Plan 9 Studios for our kick-ass theme song. Also, if you're in the Denver area and you're looking for a cool place to see movies, we see them at the Alamo Draft House in Littleton and now also in Sloan's Lake. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics for supplying us with all our comic needs, especially you, Andrew. You know who you are. And a big shout out to James's mom. I'm giving you an electronic hug that you can feel through the airwaves. Thanks for listening, and have a nice day.